I have two talks. I'm going to give them 1 hour. The first one is a report on Israel. And the second one is far, far, far more important. Honest doubts. Honest doubts. So we'll deal with the first one. You should have two handouts. One handout is, or three actually. One is entitled Honest Doubts. The other is a two-sided with a map on each side. And the third one is this newspaper ad in the Jerusalem Post. Does everybody have this one? No, okay. Raise your hands. Those that don't have the Jerusalem Post and the brethren that have it, would you pass them out, please? Don't start taking time to read this article now. Am I coming across loud or too loud? Because I don't like Mike staring me in the face like this one is. But I'm not too loud? No, okay. This article appeared in a once-a-month publication of the Jewish Post, which is a daily. It's the most popular English-speaking paper in Israel. I've had articles in the Jewish Post from time to time. And this article, my greatest friends in Israel are the religious right, the biblical Zionists, Israeli Jews who are biblical Zionists. But I came out in this article and let them know how I feel. They're not doing enough of an outreach to their secular brothers to make them believers in the Torah and the Tanakh. And I tell them, you're debating the land issue all the time with the left wing. Stop debating the land issue. Have a faith outreach to your unbelieving Israeli brothers. And you can develop their faith and their scriptures. The land issue will take care of itself, because they will have faith that the Jews should have all of the land, and they won't want to give it up. Sister Virginia and Bill and Estelle Gill and myself made a trip to Israel in May. And I don't know if you've heard news reports, there are plenty of them since we got back, that the food on airplanes is terrible. Not tasting, but health-wise. There's one company that prepares all the food for all over the world, and their kitchens are a disaster. And the reason this hasn't been caught up with, because people that do get stomach problems after a flight, in an hour's time, they're 100 miles or 200 miles elsewhere on another flight, so they can't put it all together. But among other things, Estelle and Virg and I have paid the consequences for over a month with that problem. Okay, the purpose, let's see, where do I want to go first? Okay, first I'll start out before the trip with one thing that happened on the trip. And then I'll give examples along that same line that is happening here in the States. You know, when I was in an office building in Israel. Man's coming in the other way down the hall, and he looks at me. He says, "Are you Pastor Rawson?" And just one word of explanation why I use the term pastor. When I first started the Jewish work, I would write many articles that I would submit to Jewish papers. And I would sign it, Kenneth Rawson, elder or minister. It always put down, Reverend Kenneth Rawson. And I kept telling him, no, I'm not a reverend. Don't use that term. Always Reverend Kenneth Rawson. So then I came across a reprint article where Brother Russell said, all elders are pastors. So the New Brunswick class passed a resolution that the New Brunswick elders in public work can use the term pastor, because they are elders of the class. So that's why I use the term pastor in the Jewish work. The Jewish people have to have a title. That means so much to them. Okay. So this man, gentleman, he says, "Are you Pastor Ross?" And I said, "Yes." He says, "You know, 10 years ago," he says, "I had left Israel before that. I wanted to have a better life, so I went to the United States." He said, "And I developed a close friendship with another Jewish man who used to be Orthodox, an Orthodox Jew, but he gave up his religion. And we were both unbelievers." He said, "Then I saw your movie, Israel Appointment with Destiny, advertised to be shown in a synagogue. So we went." He said, "As a result of seeing that movie, Israel Appointment with Destiny, his friend became a believer again in Judaism, and they both decided to make Aliyah and go to Israel to relive the rest of their lives." About 2 months before we left for Israel, on our special phone for Israel work and the classwork, which is in our home, got a call from a lady in Costa Rica. She was a secular Jew, and she had read about my booklet, or our booklet, Embrace Your Jewish Heritage, and the purpose of it is it's written targeting secular Jews and appealing to them to develop the faith in their Bible and their Torah. A month or so later, she called back. She says, "I'm making Aliyah to Israel." And she says, "I want 3 more copies of your booklet to give to my family that's remaining behind." At an Orthodox Union teenage synagogue convention, the Orthodox Union had young people's conventions, weekend conventions at synagogues. I was invited from time to time to present the film at these conventions. This one particular one was in Milwaukee. And my film was the next to the last item on the program, Israel Appointment with Destiny. And the last item was what they called a sharing meeting. We'd call a testimony meeting. An 18-year-old girl got up. She said, "You saw in the film how God told Abraham that if he left his land and went to the land that I showed him, he would receive a special blessing." She said, "In this film, God has told me to leave my family and to leave my land and go to a land that he showed me, the land of Israel, and he will give me a blessing." These are just some of the thrilling, thrilling experiences we have enjoyed in giving a message of comfort to the Jewish people through the film Israel Appointment with Destiny, or the booklet Embrace Your Jewish Heritage. Just one more. A very famous Jewish author, Orthodox Jew. He had ordered the booklet. I'll tell you how they get the booklet shortly. He had ordered the booklet and he read it. He was thrilled with it. He says, "I want 2 of those booklets for my 2 sons who are in college." He says, "They're not secular like me. I mean, they're not Orthodox like me. They're secular. And I want them to become believing Jews, believing in their Bible." So he had to send those 2 booklets to his sons. Okay, now our trip to Israel. What time did we start, by the way? 3 o'clock?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, we bring greetings from Sister Connie Campbell. Maybe some of you know her. Maybe some of you have heard of her. I immersed both Connie and her husband, Jack, many, many, many years ago. They were very dear friends, close friends of ours, in addition to being brethren in Christ. She has been living out at the retirement center. They moved to Israel for a number of years, and then Jack died over there. I could tell you a story about that. Would you bring tears to your eyes? And it didn't involve me. It involved him and his relationship with Jewish officials. So she came to the retirement center because one of her sons lived in North Washington. And for reasons that I won't go into, she moved back to Israel this past year. And we called her on the phone. We had hoped to get down to see her, but we called her on the phone, and she sent her special love. And Connie is going to play a key role in our work in Israel. We're starting a campaign of getting the Hebrew version of Israel Fulfilling Bible Israel Appointment with Destiny and the Hebrew version of Translation of Embrace Your Jewish Heritage, having them getting out to the public through newspaper ads and other methods. And Connie is going to do all the mailing for us. So we appreciate that very much, and we feel it's a providential overruling of the Lord that she moved back there. All right, our trip to Israel. There are three or four basic purposes. One was to meet with eight, not only government leaders, members of the Knesset, but Netanyahu's inner cabinet. The ones that have the most serious deciding vote on crucial issues. And the reason we wanted to have a meeting with them, I know Netanyahu, those who don't know the name, that's the Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, by personal experience. And as great as his ideals might be at times, he does not have the backbone to stand up against opposition. Besides that, he's not exactly an honest man. I learned that personally. But anyway, we were encouraging his inner cabinet to help him to maintain a firm stand on the land issue. And we realized that, you know, in the final analysis, the Lord's going to permit to happen when he wants to happen, but we feel this is a biblical issue, so this is a part of our work with the Jewish people. And they, of course, are interested in doing that very much. What can happen? Netanyahu is a member of the Likud party. The Likud party is on record, it's a part of their platform, no land giveaway to the Palestinians. Netanyahu has already agreed to a two-state Palestine. And the Palestinians already control a major part of the West Bank through past peace negotiations, but the cabinet is trying to hold them firm not to give up any more. Well, Obama's pressuring to give up more land, and what can happen is if he gives up land and his Likud party support leaves him, the largest party in Israel actually is Kadima, and therefore giving up land. So all he has to do is bring them into his government and he can give up land. So that's a possibility of what might happen in the peace process. But we'll leave that in the Lord's hands. Now there are 120 members of the Knesset. All 120 of them will personally receive a copy of the Hebrew version of Israel Appointment with Destiny. They will personally receive a copy of the DVD where I have an interview with Professor Palazzi, who is an Islamic professor who claims that all the PLO are nothing more than a gang of murderers. He feels that Israel should have all the land, they should have all of Jerusalem, and his mentor was assassinated. I expect him to be assassinated sometime in the future, but he is a close friend of mine. So we have an interview in English and in Hebrew, and that Hebrew interview was given to the Knesset members. And then also a Hebrew copy of Embrace Your Jewish Heritage. Now, the way it was given to the Knesset members, you know, if you want a Knesset member to receive anything, all you had to do was address an envelope and send it to them. But of course, you know, his box is full of about 100 to 200 envelopes every day, so he just has somebody throw 95% of them out without even looking at it. But it was arranged that a member of the Knesset would personally see to it that every other member of the Knesset personally received a copy of Israel Appointment with Destiny and Embrace Your Jewish Heritage in this Pelosi interview. All right, our second purpose of the trip was to have an outreach to rabbis of the three major modern Orthodox. The modern Orthodox in Israel are active Zionists, biblical Zionists. And to have them use Embrace Your Jewish Heritage, which, as we said, is written in a way to appeal to secular Jews to develop their faith and their scriptures. And we're receiving cooperation. One of the organizations, Young Israel, ordered immediately 100 of each of these two DVDs. They have regular sessions with members of the IDF, who are, most of them are secular, that's the Israeli army, and they're going to distribute these booklets to these secular members of the IDF. And the other two organizations are cooperating with me in other ways, so we're very pleased with that. We had a meeting with Ithamar Marcus, a remarkable man. His organization is devoted to revealing the hypocrisy, the lies, and the hidden intentions of the Palestinians. He monitors, his organization monitors every day the PLO, or the Palestinian television, that's in Arabic. And they say one thing in Arabic and they say something else to the public who aren't Arabs. And there's a lot of details here, but in essence what he has found, and he's revealing continually, is that in their school books they are encouraging all the Palestinian youth to aspire to be terrorists when they grow up. That's the highest ideal you can have, is to be a terrorist, a suicide bomber, and go immediately to heaven. And I won't tell you what's going to happen in heaven. You know. And they have, you know, we have on public service television, you know, programs with Mickey Mouse and other cartoons. Well, they have the same thing. Only Mickey Mouse is an Islamic terrorist. That's an ideal for young people. And I could go on with a lot of how they are just training their youth with lies so that they will just grow up with the desire to be suicide bombers. Now, we had a number of radio interviews. How many of you know what a Route 7 is? Raise your hands. Very uninformed audience. I don't expect you to know. A Route 7 is a organization that's on the West Bank. It's a settlers organization, and they have a news program, a news broadcast, and they are very active in defending Israel's rights to the land and not giving up any of the land. And I had an interview with Rabbi Richman of Route 7 on his radio program, which was for a half hour. I had a half hour interview with him before that time. So we had the opportunity to give our biblical logic and reasoning behind Israel's right to the land and Israel's position in the plan of God. I was supposed to, and some of you have heard of Rabbi Tovia Singer. He has a very popular hour-long program that he usually divides up into three different interviews. He wanted to have an hour-long interview with me, but I had to cancel it out because my schedule was too full. I had an interview, it was a shorter interview, but I had an interview on Israel's main radio station. And this interview was played twice over one weekend. I'm just thankful to the Lord that these opportunities opened up. Now, we read met a very interesting man, Rabbi Benarok, who is heads up the Sephardic Educational Center. Sephardic Jews are Middle East Jews, so that's their origin, in contrast to Ashkenazi Jews who are from Europe. Now, he had a very wealthy, he came to Israel maybe about 7 years ago, made Aliyah. He had a very wealthy congregation in the United States. He had a good salary. He said to me, he says, there's no such thing as a religious Zionist in the United States. He says, you can't, if you're a Jew, you can't be a Zionist if you're living in the United States. You might be a religious Jew, but you're not a Zionist. He gave up his very lucrative salary and made Aliyah to Israel. Okay, we just want to briefly deal with where do we go from here in Israel. First of all, just want to make an observation about Israel's dynamic economy. Israel is not suffering from the recession. They did for 1 year, not as bad as the other countries. Israel is out of the recession. This year, their economic growth will be 4%. Next year, their economic growth will be 6%. They are the top-notch, high-tech country of the world, exporting more high-tech technology than anybody else. They have discovered natural gas, finally, oil. I'll tell you a joke on the oil. No, for years, ever since Israel became a state, you know, all the Arab nations around them have oil. Israel's digging all over the place. They can't find oil. So they had a joke in Israel. The joke was that when Moses crossed the Red Sea, he made a wrong turn. But finally, they discovered oil. They discovered natural gas, and plenty of natural gas, and plenty of oil. Israel will not only have enough oil for its own needs, Israel will be exporting natural gas and oil to other countries. Israel's economy is on the way up, barring a war that might have adversely affected their economy, which I don't think is indicated in scriptures. I think there will be a next war, and that's our point. Next point in our lesson is, I think many of us feel that Psalms 83 describes a future war that Israel will have against the Arab nations. I'm not even going to take time to read it because I don't have that kind of time. But it gives a list in verse, I believe, 5 and 6 of Arab nations that Israel will have a war with. And never in the history of ancient Israel did Israel have a war with this array of nations. So this is a prophecy that hasn't even had a historic fulfillment. Now there's, at the end of it, it speaks of the prophecy, it speaks of Assyria will be in the Hebrew, the strong arm or military might of the Arabs. And you say, oh, well, that was Assyria. That's Iraq. And that was Saddam Hussein. No. Iraq under Saddam Hussein gave no military equipment or might to their fellow Arab nations. But Russia has given, over the years and more than ever now, military equipment to all the Arab nations. And there are scriptures, Micah the 5th chapter, Zechariah the 10th chapter, and there's others that show that when Assyria and Israel are used in end-time prophecy, Syria is symbolic of Russia. So we feel that in Psalms 83, that where Assyria becomes the strong arm of the Arab nations, it is referring to Russia supplying armament to the Arab nations. Okay, we feel Israel will have a decisive battle and defeat the Arab nations, and we feel that will lay the groundwork for the fulfillment of Ezekiel 38, where Israel is dwelling at peace and prosperity in unwalled villages. And there's a lot of detail to this line of reasoning that we won't be able to go into, but we feel that Israel, at that point, after that war, that the United States and the UN especially will pressure Israel and say, all right, we'll recognize the new borders, but enough is enough. No more wars in the Middle East. We will demilitarize the Middle East. And yes, but we'll guarantee you protection. Oh, you say, Israel never agreed to that. Oh, no? Who was the greatest hawk of Israel's prime ministers? Shamir. During the Gulf War, the first invasion of Iraq, or not Iraq, who was it? Pardon? Yeah, okay. Israel, remember, was being devastated with missiles. And Israel wanted to bomb them out. And they asked the United States permission. Why did they ask the United States permission? Why? Because the United States was leading the offensive against that country. But any plane, airplane that did not have a certain code designation agreed to by the United States, if they entered into that territory, they would be shot down. And the United States says, we will not give you permission to go in there and bomb out. You will let us defend you. And Shamir, the greatest hawk in the history of Israel, says, all right. So we feel we have precedent for Israel demilitarizing, and there's a lot more to that story. We feel that the Western powers that will be defending Israel at that time are represented in about the verse 13 of Ezekiel 38, and the part they planned that is interesting in itself, which we won't go into. But just to say, we feel that after the next Israeli-Arab war, which Israel will take much territory, the economy of Israel will continue on the upswing, and that will lay the groundwork for them dwelling prosperously at peace in unwalled villages. Now, this handout gives you other scriptures that we base a future war with Israel and the Arabs and Israel winning. We gave those other scriptures in past talks. On the back side is an interesting thing, and this is a part of the problem in the Middle East. There is no Middle East map published by an Arab or Muslim nation that has the name Israel. They all have the name Palestine because they do not recognize Israel. For several decades, U.S. officials, first to Arafat's office and now to the other leaders of the PLO, they're in Arafat's office. They're discussing the peace process with him. And there's this big map behind Arafat. Palestine occupying all of Israel. And the U.S. officials don't say a word about it. All right. That will conclude our discussion on Israel. And the second part of our lesson today is honest doubts. And it's a lesson that is very personal to me because I lived it and I live it. So that's your handout. It's based on the life of Job. And you know the story of Job as it starts out. Job's the most wealthiest man in his old area. He's a recognized leader, a ruler. And then he's devastated with tragedies. He loses all of his children. All of his herds are destroyed. His farm is destroyed. And his wife says to him, "You're a curse of God," and she leaves him. And you know, when we think of all of that tragedy, and then Job was laying on his back, covered with sores, some feel boils, in continual pain. And during that experience at the beginning, and that's all we think of, and we say, "Oh boy, Job was fantastic." Job 13:15, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." What a faith. What trust. But it didn't continue. You know, Job was a wonderful example of enduring tragedy. But sometimes tragedies aren't easy to endure for a long period of time. And actually, in Job's case, it was not. By the time Job's comforters finished with him, Job was a basket case of doubt. And he said in Job 30:20-24, the New Revised Standard Version, he's praying to God, "I cry to you, and you do not answer me. I stand and you merely look at me. You have turned cruel to me. With the might of your hand you have persecuted me. You lift me up on the wind. You make me ride on it, and you toss me about in the roar of the storm. I know that you will bring me to death." Did you realize that prayer is in the book of Job? Have you realized that Job prayed that prayer? That prayer of distrust, accusing God of trying to kill him? These are harsh words. Yet God in Job 2:10 said that in all of this, Job sinned not with his lips, because his doubts were honest doubts. It doesn't say that in the rest of the verse, but I'm adding that. Now, there's several layers of lessons in the book of Job. You can study it from the standpoint of the permission of evil. You can study it from the standpoint, which some have done, Carl Hagensick especially, of Job representing Israel and the plan of God. But I think there's also the level of personal tragedy. And I think of Job's comforts as being emblematic of the adversary through our flesh, using every line of human reasoning to wear away our faith. Now, God did not rebuke Job. God understands honest doubts. Instead of answering Job directly, we know that God raised questions about the mysteries of the creation, about the mysteries of the universe, and he raised these questions in Job 38 through chapter 40. And these questions were designed to remind Job that he really knew very little about God. And three of these questions are found in Job 38, verses 31 and 32, and they illustrate the dynamic logic conveyed in God's questions to Job. Job 38, verse 31 and 32. Canst thou bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion? Canst thou guide Arcturus and his sons? We don't have time to make the, and I have them in my notes here, to make the actual scientific or quotes from scientists that verify these scriptural facts. But astronomers, only in the middle of the 20th century, really made the following discoveries about Orion, Pleiades, and Arcturus. You know, the constellation Orion, you had the triangle on top, the head and the shoulders, and then you had the three stars for the belt, and then the sword holder, and then the two stars at the bottom that represent his legs. And God said to Job, can you loose the bands of Orion? You realize what scientists have discovered in the 20th century? Not only the bands of Orion, but each star in the constellation of Orion is going ever so infinitesimally in a different direction. Just like three ships that come from three different ports, and momentarily they're in a straight line in the middle of the ocean, and then they go to diverse ports. Whether it's a million years, 500,000 years, 10 million years, Orion will be no more. But then the contrast with the Pleiades. Pleiades means five, and we think there's five stars, or seven rather. And we think that, well, there's seven stars in the Pleiades. Well, there's 250 stars in the Pleiades. But they're in seven different groupings. Evidently, in ancient times, you could see all seven of these groupings. In our day, the Pleiades is in the autumn sky. And at best, at times, you can see six. Usually, you can just see five. But there's six or seven groupings, but they're composed of 250 stars. And as the astronomers have looked at the Pleiades through the telescopes, they are just awestruck with the beauty of the Pleiades, these 250 stars, and their symmetry as they seem to be prancing in orbit in the universe. And not a one will ever be loosed or drift away. They are so closely knit together. And then Arcturus. Can you guide Arcturus with his sons? I could give you dimensions of our church, the largest sun in the world, in the universe, the fastest runner. They call him a runaway star. Canst thou guide our church and his sons, S-O-N? Our church was the largest, S-U-N. And the smaller runaway stars are spoken of sons, S-U-N, as his sons, S-O-N, because they're like him in that they're runaway stars. Now scientists look at our church and they marvel, why doesn't he crash as he's just pell-melling through the solar system? Now the lesson of the Pleiades, Orion, and Arcturus. And that's on the back page. Job, God is saying to Job in this experience, Job, you think I'm not concerned about your suffering. Well, let me ask you these questions. Job, can you loose the bands of Orion? No. You can't loose the bands of Orion. But I can, my divine power will. Someday, Orion will exist no longer. Job, can you bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades? Are you the one that made them, gave them such symmetry and beauty that they just prance and orbit? No, you can't do that. But I am doing it. Job, can you guide our church and his sons, these runaway stars, and prevent them from crashing into another planet that they go pell-mell through the Milky Way and eventually out? They're not going to crash. I had them in control, although they seem to be completely out of control. Job, if I can care for the details of the universe, do you doubt that I not only care about the details of your life, but I have the ability to solve your problems? Trust that there's a good reason I'm permitting these tragedies. Remember Job. I work from the perspective of eternity. And we know the wonderful way the story of Job ended. What an awesome way God chose to tell Job that he was in full control of human affairs, including Job's life. And when God finished his series of questions, what was Job's exclamation? Job 42, verses 2 through 5. I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not. Things too wonderful for me, which I know not. Now listen to this. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now my eyes have seen thee. He saw and understood the power of God. He knew about God, yes, but he only heard of him, so to speak. But now mine eyes have seen thee. You know, we all have doubts. We have doubts along every line. Who hasn't had a doubt? Raise your hand. We have doubts about how the Lord's going to take care of our problems, how they're going to take care of our sick sister, or our sick mother, or our sick parents. We have doubts about financial situations. We even have doctrinal doubts. When you have doubts, don't start telling everybody about them. Be like Job. Take them to the Lord. Leave it in His hands. I don't know how many of you knew old Brother Simbaum. One of the sweetest saints I ever knew. He said, Ken, in my studies of the Scriptures, there were times when I just couldn't understand what Brother Russell was saying, and I didn't agree with it. He said, I could have got up on the platform and spoken about it. He says, no, I put it on the shelf. And I prayed about it. And in time, the matter cleared up. And we have other kinds of doubts. Don't right away run to the brethren. There's many brethren that have expressed their doubts and their concerns and their tragedies to brethren, only years later to the regret that they did. Take your doubts to the Lord. He will understand. And He knows we're going to have doubts. He knows there's such a thing as honest doubts. And He will respect them as such. You know, when tragedy strike, we seem to accept them with an expectancy of faith. But occasionally, the weariness of time, the pressures of Satan and the flesh can erode our personal trust and our faith, which is belief and trust, subtly slips back to just belief. Oh yes, we still believe God, but we might no longer trust Him. At a time like this, pray the prayer of who was the man that came to Jesus about the healing of his son. He says, Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. Okay, I'm going to try and go on and try to squeeze in a scripture in Jeremiah, which I call honest prayer. Jeremiah 20, verse 7. O Lord, thou hast deceived me, and I was deceived. Thou art stronger than I and hast prevailed. I am in derision daily. Everyone mocketh me. For since I spake, I cried out, I cried violence, spoil, because the word of the Lord was made a reproach unto me and a derision daily. Now when Jeremiah was called to be a prophet, he was probably about 17 years old. And the Lord says, Jeremiah, I'd like you to be my prophet. Oh boy, 17 years old, the prophet of the Lord, Jeremiah just jumped in. And now he says, no, you didn't tell me when you told me to be your prophet. You didn't tell me I was going to say things that have to say things that are going to make people persecute me. He says, Lord, I'm not going to talk for you anymore. In verse 9, then I said, I will not make mention of him, not speak any more in his name. But his word was in my heart, a burning flame, shut up in my bones. And I was weary with foreboding, and I could not stand. What happened in this prayer when Jeremiah started out? Thou hast deceived me. Because of his persecution, Job developed all sorts of selfish thoughts, bitter thoughts, thoughts about God. And they were all bound up in him. And then he prays this prayer of honesty. You deceived me. And he told the Lord why he thought he deceived him. And what happened? As Job was expressing these thoughts of selfishness and self and self-will, He was emptying his heart of selfishness. And when he had fully emptied his heart of selfishness and fleshly feelings, his heart was now ready for the Lord to speak to him. He says, I can't refrain from speaking for the Lord. I can't refrain from being his prophet, even if it's going to mean persecution. Brethren, pray honest prayers. No, we have a problem. It's whirling around in our mind. It's whirling around in our heart. And we get down and bend the knee. And we say words in prayer that we think we should be saying to the Lord. We say words in prayer that we think the Lord wants us to hear wants us to say. And we don't mention these selfish or these thoughts that are really bothering us in our heart. And we don't even realize they're selfish thoughts. So we just pray a nice prayer. Get up from our knees. And these thoughts are still whirling around in our hearts. Brethren, the Lord knows those thoughts are in your heart. Express those thoughts to Him. Tell Him why you don't understand, why He permitted this experience to happen to you, or that experience to happen to you. Why this brother's an elder and he has speaking appointments and I don't, or he's more popular than I am. There's all sorts of evil thoughts we have in our hearts, but we don't think of them as being selfish. But if you express them, okay, you have a trial with the brother. Tell the Lord what you think about that brother. Tell the Lord why you think that trial is taking place. And when you try to put it in words, it's one thing to have swirling thoughts. But when you express them in words, you think about them a little more. And you tell the Lord, well, brother so-and-so, thus and so, he did thus and so, and thus and thus and thus. And by the time you get all of these thoughts out, what's happened? You've emptied your heart of selfishness and self-thinking in that particular trial. And now the Lord is able to speak to you because your heart has been in honest prayer, has been emptied of selfishness. I plead with you all, brethren. Pray honest prayers. Confess everything. Tell the Lord everything that's whirling in your heart. And I guarantee you will have blessings you never had before. God bless you.